It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. The Wisconsin Department of Justice's Division of Criminal Investigation is investigating the fatal shooting of a Madison man by Madison police on Wednesday.
Public officials have identified the victim as Corey Ruiz, and video from witnesses show an officer firing multiple shots at him while police were attempting to arrest him.
The police department says Ruiz had pulled out a knife and injured the officer who fired the shots.
In a press conference yesterday, Madison Police Chief John Patterson said his department will cooperate fully and not hide from any aspect of the investigation.
This is an open and active homicide investigation right now. In accordance with state statute, long-standing practice, the Madison Police Department has called for a thorough and independent criminal investigation into yesterday's shooting.
Madison police do not have body-worn cameras, but Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway indicated that funding to purchase them will be included in her city budget proposal for the first time later this year.
We're checking in on how police shootings are investigated by outside agencies and what role body cameras and video footage can play in incidents like these.
Michael Bell Sr. is a victims' rights activist and former Air Force pilot from Kenosha. His son was killed by police in 2004, and he later helped pass the state law that mandates independent investigation into police shootings. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
How does this work? What does this investigation look like when an outside agency comes to investigate a police shooting?
Well, first off is that, as you heard the police chief say, in accordance with state statute, up until 2014, that state statute didn't even exist. For 100 years prior to that, all police departments investigated their own shooting, and historically, none of them had ever found themselves unjustified. And in the shooting death of my son in 2004, they did that, and there was tremendous amount of conflicting interest, and we never still had a proper investigation. But I and a group of advocates in the Madison area, along with Gary Bies, who was a state House Assemblyman, and Chris Taylor, helped pass the first law in the nation that mandated that all police shootings be investigated by an outside agency. So this is a good, this is a really good thing, because when co-workers investigate themselves, they tend to overlook the true facts. And I'm very happy that the Department of Justice is coming in, because of the fact that the Department of Justice doesn't have any skin in the game. If Milwaukee had a shooting and the Sheriff's Department decided to investigate a police shooting in Milwaukee, you know, there's skin in the game because there's retribution. But the Department of Justice itself doesn't have any skin in the game, and therefore they need to conduct the investigation.
When this shooting has happened now, does this investigation look like any other kind of shooting investigation? I've seen some concerns that there's some lag time between the incident itself and when the outside agency might start getting, for example, statements from witnesses or the officers themselves.
Well, they should take over immediately, and I've always watched that. But you know, you have to call the agency in, so they have to protect the crime scene. That became a problem in Milwaukee because there was a shooting there, and before they can get an outside investigation team in there, the body laid under the ground under a cover, and the residents in the local neighborhood saw that, and it sat there for like 8 hours before they can get a team out there. So this is something that has to happen immediately, but there isn't a response team available.
I get the sense in some of these police shootings, there is skepticism. Even with an outside agency, people might worry there's still law enforcement and be looking to cover the backs of their colleagues, even if it's in another agency. Do you personally feel more trust in this system that because it has an outside agency, despite those concerns?
I'm going to tell your listeners right now that after I've been looking at police-involved shootings for over 20 years, I do have a lot of confidence in this system, because they have a reputation to maintain, and they don't want to just protect themselves. So, yes, I do have confidence in the system.
And I've talked to you in the past. Part of the role here is finding out what happened, finding out if charges should be filed. An important thing to you as somebody who had been with the Air Force is saying, what do we learn from this to prevent a future incident? You modeled your proposals in part on post-air incident accidents. What do you hope in tragedies like this we can learn to prevent future tragedies?
Well, if the system was in place like the NTSB, we would look at every aspect of this and say, what can we do to prevent this from happening again? That doesn't happen in law enforcement. I can tell your listeners right now that if there was a knife, that officer is justified in using deadly force. But does it mean it's necessary? And I think the situational awareness of that officer might have been a little bit diminished. He didn't recognize that that there were four officers standing over somebody that was on the ground. He was being tased, and that officer used deadly force. And that's a training scenario, and that could be improved upon. But I'm telling your listeners right now that my looking at this for over 20 years, this shooting is going to be real justified.
You think it will be ruled justified based on what you've seen so far?
Yes.
Do you think that is, again, based on your background and what you've seen so far, do you think that would be the appropriate outcome?
You have to give an officer the right to make a decision in a life and death moment. You can't take that away from him. Whether that means it's necessary or not is something that's important. But you have to give the. You have to remember, an officer is. He has to make a split decision and come back and second guess it the next day. But doing a proper investigation is the first part. But then having a group look at it and say, what went wrong, and how do we prevent this from happening again? And I assure you that things can be done differently to make sure that the training is more improved. Right now, and anytime an officer sees knife, he automatically knows in his brain that he can use deadly force. I want your listeners to take a look at an 87-year-old woman who was tased on July 3rd of 2019 for pulling dandelions, because she had a knife. They were screaming at her, drop the knife. She was Polish. She didn't understand what was going on. She was wearing a babushka, and they tased her. That is the exact same mentality that is occurring in law enforcement across this nation, and especially in Wisconsin. And there are other incidents very similar to this where deadly force was used just down the road from Madison in Neillsville.
Michael, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Kate. Bye.
That's Michael Bell, senior victims' rights activist, former Air Force pilot from Kenosha. He lost his son in a police shooting in 2004. With us today to share how independent law enforcement agencies investigate police shootings under a Wisconsin law he helped pass in 2014. Now we're looking at the role that video footage can play in investigations and public perception of police shootings. Madison is one of the state's few large city police departments that's not using body-worn cameras. Megan Perry is an associate professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Rhode Island. She focuses her research on public perceptions of police misconduct and use of force and the use of video. Megan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Madison Common Council President Sabrina Madison described what it was like watching bystander video of Wednesday's police shooting during a press conference yesterday. Here's a listen.
I don't see what's happening altogether. There's some cars in a way. But I can hear the sounds. I can hear the sounds. I can hear the words, taser, and I could just hear the shots. And it's the shots that don't escape you.
Megan, what kind of difference does it make when the public has immediate access to video of a police shooting, as happened in Madison, as opposed to delayed release of the footage or no recordings at all?
Well, any amount of viewing of police interactions, especially those that use force, are going to impact public perceptions, right? Even when, like Michael was saying, it's a justified legal issue, we still are going to walk away from that video feeling worse about the police most of the time. So far as viewing bystander video or those from citizen journalists, maybe first or the only one that we're allowed, we don't have any other information. So we're only going to piece what was presented. And for the most part, bystanders, we tend not to start filming until the middle of an incident, until we see that, hey, there's something going on. So there's going to be a lot of context that's missing. And like she was saying, there's a lot of disruption or things in the way that from those angles that you might not be able to really see and understand what's happening and why that officer might be making that choice.
Do you think that the presence of often bystander videos and in some cases police body cams changes the behavior of police officers and bystanders for that matter?
Yes and no. It depends on what kind of behavior you're talking about. So far as, you know, there's a lot of talk around body-worn cameras is going to reduce officer use of force. The research just doesn't hold that up, right? It doesn't really statistically change how often or when force is used, right? But we have seen that there is some changes around officer complaints. And so that's interesting in terms of that might be changing how the officer might be interacting with somebody, or it might change how the civilian might be interacting with the officer when they know they're filmed, right? So it can change. It's called the civilizing effect a bit. Those interactions are transactional. So somebody comes into it really hot, you oftentimes respond, and that can be how something can escalate. So when the presence of a camera can kind of cool things down a little bit.
Very briefly, Megan, I think the hope is always that police body cams or bystander cams, they're going to give us the real story. They'll tell us clearly what happened. People come away from watching videos with different conclusions a lot of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the hardest things, I think, for policing is that, you know, you and I and, you know, everybody else, Michael and whoever else can all watch the exact same video. And there's this kind of false idea that it's completely objective. It's going to show the objective truth, but we're bringing our subjective opinions to what we're seeing. Are we?
Thanks to Megan Perry, professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of Rhode Island. We also heard from victims' rights activist Michael Bell, Sr. of Kenosha.